It is indeed a great privilege to come together and to gather around the table and remember Jesus. I'm thankful for everyone's presence, thankful especially to God who has called us to be His. And thankful for the rich associations that we share in Christ Jesus as we strive to help and encourage one another. Some of us recently have been getting together on Thursday mornings and looking at the Psalms. We're just kind of getting started out, beginning that process. And recently we've looked at Psalm 3, 4, and 5 over the past several weeks. Psalm 3, according to the heading, as it was read just a moment ago, is a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom. And a number of students of the Psalms suggest that perhaps Psalm 4 and 5 were written against the background of the same events, although we don't have anything really specific in the Psalms to indicate that. Some have felt that their association together might suggest that. Whatever the case, all of these Psalms were written in the face of trouble, of great difficulty. And they are expressions of David's heart to God in the face of that difficulty. And there are some things that David knew. There are some things that he understood in the face of difficulty that will be very helpful to us if we will operate based on the same kinds of conclusions that David had reached. And so I want to look at David's attitude, primarily David's attitude about God, as he faced these very challenging situations. We'll look at some possible historical background for some of this. But I want us to think about how David felt about God, because that is the thing that transformed the way he responded in these circumstances. And the first thing that David understood was that what other people were saying and what other people were doing really didn't matter. It didn't matter how many of them there were. It didn't matter how powerful they were. It didn't matter how influential they were. None of that mattered in the face of David's knowledge about God. In Psalm 3, beginning in verse 1, David says, "O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head." And of course, remember, this is written, according to the heading, written in the situation when David is fleeing from Absalom. And when he says, "Many are rising up against me," that is a profound understatement. A profound understatement. In 2 Samuel 15 and verse 6, there is a picture of Absalom as he is at the gate and he is winning the people over. And we're told that in this manner Absalom dealt with all Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole away the hearts of the men of Israel. And then after Absalom has himself proclaimed king, a messenger comes to David and says in 2 Samuel 15:13, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom." And so with the exception of the 600 men who fled Jerusalem with David and a few friends, all Israel has gone over to Absalom. And so to say, "Many are rising up against me," again, is a profound... The whole country is rising up against him. Again, with only a few exceptions. Many were also saying, "There is no deliverance for him in God." Now remember, God had told David that The sword was going to come to his house as a result of his sin with Bathsheba. And that indeed comes to pass. And all of David's enemies are acting as if God is not going to protect him. In fact, Shimei, a Benjamite from Saul's family, comes out as David is fleeing, and he says, "Get out. Get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. And behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed." And there was some truth to that. David had shed innocent blood in the situation with Bathsheba. And so Shimei is saying to David as he's fleeing, there's no, don't expect help from God. It's not coming. In 2 Samuel 17, 1 and 2, Ahithophel says to Absalom, "Please let me choose 12,000 men that I may arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and exhausted and terrify him so that all the people who are with him will flee. Then I will strike down the king alone." Absalom, or Ahithophel, doesn't specifically say that God has abandoned David, but he acts as if God has abandoned David. Everyone believes that David has been forsaken of God. But David knows that God is faithful. And he says in Psalm 33 and 4, "You, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain." David was confident, even though he knows he's being punished by God. He is confident in his relationship with God. And he is confident because of what he had heard from God through Nathan in 2 Samuel 12 and verse 13. When Nathan confronted David, David says to Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." And Nathan said to David, "The Lord has taken away your sin. You shall not die." And David believes that. And it's indicated in this psalm, because six times in this psalm, David addresses him as Yahweh or Jehovah, as the covenant God. He is appealing to him as the covenant God. He believes that God has forgiven him and God will deliver him. He begins his prayer not with "I," but with "you." His focus is not on himself, but on God. And he is not trusting in anything but God. He's not trusting in his experience. He's not trusting in his military skill. He's not trusting in his network of friends. He is trusting in the Lord. And that trust trumps whatever anybody else might say or do. David is able to overcome that. He's able to overcome these people who are saying God's not going to deliver you, because he knows who God is, and he knows that God forgave him. He's not worried about the might and power of his enemies, because he knows who God is. And he knows that God is faithful, and God is able to deliver with many or a few. And so, whatever his enemies might do, however many of them there might be, whatever they might say, David is able to lie down and sleep at the end of the day because he knows God. Secondly, David knows that what he does in this situation really does matter. That is, the kinds of choices he makes. He says in Psalm 4, "O sons of men, how long will my honor become a reproach? How long will you love what is worthless and aim at deception? But know that the Lord has set apart the godly man for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and trust in the Lord. It must have been very tempting on a number of occasions in this situation with Absalom for David to take matters into his own hands, to try and angle for an outcome. But David repeatedly refuses to do that. In 2 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 24, Zadok comes out to David. It says, "Now behold, Zadok came and all the Levites with him, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God. And Abiathar came up until all the people had finished passing from the city." And so Zadok, the high priest, and the Levites have all come out in support of David, and they brought the Ark with them. And so essentially they're offering, we're with you, David. We know you're the Lord's anointed, and we stand with you, and we're bringing God with us. So they thought they're going to take the Ark of Covenant, the preeminent symbol of the presence of God. They're going to take that out so David can have God with him, and everybody will know that God is with him because he's got the Ark. And that certainly would be one way of saying to everybody, God is with me and not with them. But listen to what David says in response in 2 Samuel 15, 25 and 26. "Return the Ark of God to the city. If I find favor in the sight of the Lord, then he will bring me back again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he should say thus, 'I have no delight in you,' behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seems good to him." And so David absolutely refuses to try and twist God's arm to be with him. He says, I'm going to cast myself on the mercy of the Lord. And I know that God can bring me back. He can restore me to his presence. And I'm going to trust him to do the right thing. I'm not going to try and compel him to one outcome or the other. David won't do that. And when Shimei came out and cursed David, we read that just a moment ago. In 2 Samuel 16:9, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, says to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over now and cut off his head." And that must have been tempting. Everybody's turned against David, and this descendant of Saul comes out and rails against David. But the king says to Abishai, "What have I to do with you, O sons of Zeruiah? If he curses, and if the Lord has told him, 'Curse David,' then who shall say, 'Why have you done so?'" Then David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "Behold, my son, who came out for me, seeks my life. How much more now this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me, instead of his cursing this day." David knows God. And David said, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to trust the Lord. And I'm not going to let circumstances suck me in to acting selfishly, to doing what under other circumstances everyone would acknowledge is wrong. Circumstances don't change anything. The choices I make in this situation matter, and they matter profoundly. And that's why he says in Psalm 4:4, "Tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still." Tremble and do not sin. We actually, thanks to Andrew, we just read that, "Be angry and do not sin," is drawn from this psalm. And tremble may indicate, Some of your translations may in fact have something like "be angry." Some think it's anger. Some think it's fear. And David is probably a little both. Probably a little angry and a little afraid. But he knows God, and he knows God is merciful, and he knows God is in control. And that is his meditation. That's not the same thing as knowing the outcome. And David manifests throughout this. He doesn't know what's going to happen. David's not sure what's going to happen. He says in 2 Samuel 15:25, "If I find favor in the sight of the Lord, then he will bring me back again and show me both it and his habitation." And he says in 16:12, "Perhaps the Lord will look on my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursing this day." He doesn't know the outcome for certain. What he knows is that God is good and God is with those who are good. And he's not going to do the wrong thing to get to what he believes is the right outcome. They said, I'm not going to do wrong. I'm going to do right. I'm going to do right regardless of what anybody else does. I'm going to do right even when my friends don't like it. Even when they want to do wrong, I'm going to do the right thing. And I'm going to trust God that the right thing is going to turn out okay because of who God is. Because God is merciful. And God will look on my affliction. God will look on my suffering and see that in the midst of my affliction and my suffering, I still trust Him. And that's what I'm counting on. That's my strategy. That's a terrible strategy from a worldly perspective. It doesn't make any sense at all. Can you imagine Abishai standing there thinking, we're running for our lives from this rebellious son and the riffraff that he's cobbled together, and he won't even let me take out this lousy, loudmouth Benjamite? What are we doing? David says, I'm not doing it. I'm not taking matters into my own hands. I may lay on my bed and tremble in anger, but I'm going to lay there and remember who the Lord is. And I'm going to do right, no matter what anybody else wants to do. And no matter how easy the wrong thing might seem to be a path to what I want. I'm going to serve God. And he does. And finally, David knew that God was a God that ultimately was going to make things right. In Psalm 5, 3 through 6, it's interesting, the first Psalm 3 and Psalm 4, David, both in both of those Psalms, he talks about these being evening prayers and lying down and going to sleep. Psalm 5 is obviously a morning prayer. He says, "In the morning, O Lord, you will hear my voice. In the morning I will order my prayer to you and eagerly watch. For you are not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. No evil dwells with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all who do iniquity. You destroy those who speak falsehood. The Lord abhors the man of bloodshed and deceit." Now, that's an interesting phrase. He says, in the morning you will hear my voice. In the morning I will order my prayer to you and what? And watch. David says, I'm going to pray and I'm going to watch. Well, what's he watching for? Well, he's watching for an answer to his prayer. The watching is an anticipation, a positive anticipation of God's response. David believes that the Lord will hear him and the Lord will make things right. Now again, maybe not immediately, maybe not in the way David's expecting, but he knows where God stands. Listen to these statements that David makes. You are not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. David knows where God stands. No evil dwells with you. David knows where God stands. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all who do iniquity. Now, I'm going to pause here, parenthetical statement, just a moment, tangent, whatever you want to call it. Did you hear what David said about God? That he hates all who do iniquity? People say all the time, God hates sin and loves the sinner. And there's a sense in which that is true. That God loved us while we were yet sinners. That is true. He sent His Son while we were yet sinners. That is true. But if we think that God has warm, fuzzy feelings for those who are engaged in sin and wickedness, we are wrong. God hates those who do iniquity. And we can't just press on in our sin and think, well, God loves sinners. No. Love and hate in these statements have nothing to do with feeling and everything to do with choices. God acted through His Son to call sinners back to Him, and that was a loving thing to do. But David knew all too well that those who persist in sin will end up on the wrong side of God's wrath. And we minimize the wrath of God to our hurt. It's not popular to talk about anymore. But God has not changed. Political correctness has not reached the thrones of heaven. And God is not concerned with His popularity in Western culture. That's not a concern for Him. He is concerned with justice. He is concerned with righteousness. He is concerned with holiness and love and mercy, certainly. But David knew where God stood. He hates those who do iniquity. You destroy those who speak falsehood. And so David is expressing complete and total confidence in the justice of God, in the character of God. Now again, he's not sure exactly how this is going to work out, but he knows when it's all said and done, God will have done the right thing. And he can count on that. And so for David, and this is important, for David, it's not about... And the reason he left the ark behind was because it was never about getting God on his side. It was all about David getting on God's side. And David knew that those who stand with God will stand, and those who don't stand with God will not stand. David understood that. And so David has absolute trust in the justice and mercy of God. And he had reason to know this. He had good reason to know this. Way back in 1 Samuel 17, when he was still a boy, and he went before Saul to talk to him about the Goliath problem, David says to Saul, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, He will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." Everybody who looked at Goliath saw how big he was, how armored he was, how armed he was. And David looked out there, and he saw a guy who didn't have God with him. He sees an uncircumcised Philistine. He sees a guy who's not in a covenant relationship with God. And so Everybody's looking out there and they're seeing Goliath and they're saying, man, he's big and he's strong and he's skilled and he's armored and he's armed. And David looks out there, this kid looks out there and he says, that poor devil doesn't have God with him. I feel so sorry for him. He's coming to this thing without any kind of adequate resources. And that's the very thing he says to Goliath when David going out there. Goliath says, are you kidding me? You send some kid with a stick like I'm some kind of dog? And David says, listen, you got this whole thing wrong. You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin? What is that? I come to you in the name of the living God. You didn't. This is not even a knife, a guy bringing a knife to a gunfight. You're not even that well equipped. David knew. It was all about who had God with him. Later on, in Psalm 18, which is a psalm where David celebrates his deliverance from his enemies and primarily from Saul, he says in Psalm 18:18, they confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth into a broad place. He rescued me because he delighted in me. The Lord has rewarded me according to my righteousness, according to the cleanness of my hands. He has recompensed me. Saul had everybody on his side except God. David only had a few. I mean, he's out, same thing with Absalom. He's out there with 600 guys. But it's not the 600 guys he's counting on. It's the righteous, merciful, faithful God. And because David knew God, David responded to trouble in an uncommon way. And I want to suggest to you that is the sole determining factor in how we're going to respond to trouble, how we're going to respond to difficulty, how we're going to respond when people turn against us, how we're going to respond when circumstances go in directions we didn't anticipate or want. It's all going to come down to what we know about God. And David knew a lot. But the fact is, David was not in nearly as good a position to know something about God as we are. I want to ask you, does the cross say anything to us about the faithfulness of God? Does the cross say anything to us about the mercy of God? Does the cross say anything to us about the justice of God? If we've even glimpsed the cross, then we shouldn't have any trouble responding just the way David did, and even better. Because the cross says everything about the faithfulness of God, and the cross says everything about the mercy of God, and the cross says everything about the justice of God. And no one has ever been in as good a position to know about who God is and what He will do ultimately and finally. Nobody's been in as good a position as those who live this side of the cross. And so we ought to be able to pillow our heads at night. Not because everything's going well. Not because life is easy. Not because we have no enemies. But because we can lie down and meditate on God. And know that there is no reason to tremble or to be angry. But if We will trust in Him and we'll wait on Him and we will watch for His deliverance. He will be faithful and He will be merciful and He will be just. And we of all people are in the best position to know that. If you're not a Christian, you are going to face a great many situations that you are ill-equipped to deal with. And ultimately, you're going to face a situation that you have no resources upon which to draw, and that's death. But God has overcome death and overcome sin in Jesus Christ. And even those enemies can be faced with confidence if we face them with the Lord. So we want the same hope for you that we have. We want you to share that with us. We want you to be able to trust in God in the face of all the challenges and all the enemies that life brings our way, and particularly the enemies of sin and death. So we would call you to God through Jesus Christ, to believe in Him, turn away from trying to deliver yourself by yourself. Turn away from sin and self-will and the folly that entails. And confess Jesus as Lord. Be baptized to put to death that old man, as Andrew helped us think about just a moment ago. Be raised up to walk in a newness of life, a life of hope and purpose. That is our hope and our prayer for you. If we can help you to obey the gospel, nothing would give us greater joy. If you're a Christian and you need encouragement, you need strength in the face of the challenges before you, let us know that as well as we stand and as we sing.